Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 18, 2019. South Sudan's tax commissioner says he has been threatened for revoking exemptions.
These are the people who are trusted by His Excellency the President, appointed in position to support his vision. But they are not doing their work. They are busy running around. Should we have been here, the threat is going on. Every day they are working, you'll be removed. So what is happening here is that there are people who really don't want this system to work.
And Ugandan officials say hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese refugees are still arriving into Uganda.
We started receiving a high influx of refugees from January this year. Up to now, the refugees are still coming. We've received a total of 12,857 refugees.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The commissioner of South Sudan's Revenue Authority says he's facing difficulties in enforcing taxation laws in the country. The head of the Revenue Authority says the country is losing billions of South Sudanese pounds to illegal tax exemptions. Lasuba Memo has details for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Tax Commissioner Olympio Atipo says he has received several threats from unidentified individuals whom he says are against his efforts to fight corruption within the taxation department.
These are the people who are trusted by His Excellency the President, appointed in position to support his vision. But they are not doing their work. They are busy running around. Should we have been here, the threat is going on. Every day they are working, you'll be removed. So what is happening here is that there are people who really don't want this system to work because the chaos, they are benefiting from the chaos.
South Sudan in Focus saw a letter dated June 14th written by James Maik Ayi, a minister in the office of the president, and addressed to Finance Minister Salvatore Garang, requesting that the National Revenue Authority exempt the RAC Resource Group from paying taxes. The company is described as an indigenous construction company. The letter says the company planned to import factory service equipment, medical items, fuel, agricultural and petroleum products, construction materials, and food worth more than $491 million. The letter states, in reference to the government's policy on promotion of local enterprise and the president's commitment to provide enablers to revive the economy, I am requesting your esteemed office to grant tax exemption on the above imports. Garang Majak Bol, the first undersecretary in the Ministry of Finance, wrote a follow-up letter approving that request. Atipo says he revoked the exemption after discovering on social media and from other sources that the request for RAC's tax exemptions was actually made by the minister in the office of the president, Mike Aideng.
It was after revocation and other things are coming out that the letter was written by somebody from the office of the president to the minister later. The relevant issue for people to know is that as an institution, we are autonomous and we are determined to do the right thing. It doesn't matter who is involved.
South Sudan Tax Commissioner says the Revenue Authority is collecting far less revenue than it should because of too many tax exemptions.
At times, we collect maybe 1.5 billion and we grant exemption 3 billion. So you can see. Now, at times, what we are losing to exemption is more than 200% of what we are collecting.
Atipo says some exemptions are granted to allow non-governmental organizations and UN agencies which provide humanitarian assistance to citizens, but many others are for companies and individuals hired by the government to do its work. Ahmed Morjan, a Juba-based economist and economic lecturer at the University of Juba, says granting exemptions to big companies like RAC Resource Groups negatively affects the development of the entire country.
If every business person begins to apply for exemptions, and I know in the environment, a polluted environment of corruption, like ours, for instance, in South Sudan, if 50%, for instance, of the companies operating, of the business entities operating, apply for exemptions. And I know some businesses are worth, for instance, millions of US dollars. If custom duty is 20% of that value, then you see how much money is lost, which would have gone to the government. So it negatively affects revenue collection.
Murjan says granting tax exemptions to huge farms can cause a monopoly of the market by companies, making it impossible for other farms to compete. He says the government should allow an exemption for certain companies that implement a development project, but such exemptions should be granted in a transparent manner.
They are not done in the open, transparently. Items to be exempted should be known, which companies are to benefit from exemptions and why. All these things should be transparent. People should know. But if things are done in the dark without transparency, then you know it is very difficult to carry out those things. Do that, because as long as there is kickbacks, they will have to do it. But governments have to come up with accountability measures.
South Sudan in Focus made several attempts to reach Minister Maik for comment without success. Maik is said to be in the United States. For VOA, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Authorities in Western Lake State have released six artists arrested yesterday during a celebration of South Sudan's 8th anniversary of independence in Rumbek. Western Lake State Minister of Information, Majak Isaac Rohr, denies the artists were arrested. The artists accused Rohr of favoring some artists who were given opportunity to entertain the crowd during the celebration at Rumbek Freedom Square.
Some artists differ over the one who can actually present the songs during the national event, and they were about really to make violence, and then their colleagues rush in immediately and call for the security so that they are switched off from making a kind of harassment. Later, they sat down and resolved these problems among themselves.
But they slept in cells and they were released this morning. I mean, if the security takes you and keeps you there until morning, that's an arrest, isn't it?
No, it is not an arrest. When somebody is arrested, he has to be put in jail. But they were put there freely. There is no anybody who was locked inside the arrest room.
I spoke to some of them. They said you were the master of ceremony and you were biased in selecting artists to come and perform. And that is why some of these artists went by force to perform during the celebrations. How do you react to that?
I'm not responsible for the artists. They themselves, they have an association. They used to select who is going to present the songs and who is not going to sing today. But some of them were not informed. So others, immediately, they quarreled. I told them, I have to stop you now until you resolve your problem. And this is where some of them also called the police to come and collect them and put them under the confinement in a safe place so that they cannot cause insecurity. This is not an arrest.
But they were kept overnight and released this morning.
Yesterday there was rain in the evening time, and if they are left, something happened during the night hours, who will be responsible? That's why they were kept there until the morning, then they go. Does it mean that it is an arrest?
Isn't there another way of how people can resolve their issues amicably without involving the authorities in it?
But if they fail to resolve their issues by themselves and they wanted to make violence, then the security should have to appear, okay? It is not everybody actually who used to sit down and resolve issues amicably on the table. But the others would want to make violence.
In a normal situation, you would want to give them a warning, just tell them, look, what you're doing is not correct, instead of bungling them and keeping them overnight. You restrict their freedom.
No. Turns out you are not in South Sudan. You are there in Washington, D.C. The situation there is quite different from our situation. We have to address the issues according to the situation.
Yes, Your Honorable, you're right that the situation in Washington and in South Sudan are different. But the law is the same. People's rights have to be respected. Rights to express themselves freely. These artists were complaining that they were not given opportunity to perform.
Well, if we leave them to fight themselves without interfering and somebody is harmed or killed, who will be blamed? It is the government who will be blamed. Therefore, we should have to address the situation with the same condition. Huh? We, as a government, we have to protect them. If they fail to protect themselves, we have right to protect them. by seizing them and putting them in one safe place.
But that has not solved their problem within the artist associations, because they are still bitter that some people were given opportunity to perform, well, others were not.
Let me tell you, tomorrow you ask one of them to tell you exactly how their problem has been addressed. Cancelling those who attempt to make violence is not an easy thing, okay?
That's Majak Isaac Rohr, Western Lake State Information Minister. He was speaking to me from Rumbek earlier today. Ugandan officials say there's been a large influx of South Sudanese refugees in northern Uganda. A refugee registration officer at Palabek refugee camp says nearly 13,000 refugees have arrived in the camp since January, many of whom say they don't have enough to eat. Onan Walter Solomon visited Palabek earlier this week and has this report from Juba.
28-year-old Mary Imuta, a mother of three, arrived in Block 5B of Palabek Refugee Settlement Camp on Monday. Speaking in Acholi, Imura says she and her children walked for 12 hours from her home village of Seretenya in the Nangolujore area to a refugee reception center at the South Sudan-Uganda border.
I have come from Seretenya in Nangolujore. I have two children. They are twins and a third child, the eldest one. My neighbor helped me to carry the eldest child on their back until we arrived at Apiriti border point on June 20th. On June 21st, we were relocated from Apiriti to a reception center at Madi Opei. I decided to leave my village for this camp because my husband died and I am no longer able to take care of these children. Even my neighbors that we used to stay with died.
Imura says she was unable to produce enough food to feed her children at home. She says farmers in her village struggle to produce food in part because the rains are unreliable. Imura says she planted maize and sorghum but left before she could harvest the plants, hoping to receive food at the Uganda Reception Center. 28-year-old Philip Lukusanglino, a refugee from Ikotos in former Eastern Equatorial State, says he left his village in June and walked for 3 hours to reach the South Sudan-Uganda border, where 8 workers transported him to the Palabek refugee camp. Speaking in Arabic, Lino says unreliable rainfall and intercommunal fighting disrupted farming in his area, leaving many villagers with nothing to eat.
Lino sababu ina jani.
We are hungry. We don't have food. There is much conflict. We planted sorghum, maize, simsim, potatoes, okra, but the drought keeps on destroying them. When we see what is happening, it is better for us to go to a refugee camp in search for education. I want education to change my mind. My mind is full of a mentality of conflict. I will not return home unless the UN tells me to do so. I want to finish my education first.
Lino has enrolled in primary 6 classes at the camp. Gerald Lutok, a refugee registration officer at the Palabek camp, says about 300 South Sudanese refugees arrived each day in Uganda. On July 15th, he says officials relocated 500 refugees from virus collection points to Palabek camp.
We started receiving a high influx of refugees from January this year. Up to now, the refugees are still coming. We've received a total of 12,857 refugees currently.
Robert Ochan, the Palabek Refugee Settlement Camp chairman, says the huge influx of South Sudanese refugees does not come as a surprise to him. Ochan says many South Sudanese are fleeing their villages because of the high cost of goods and the lack of social services caused by the 5-year conflict. Only a few IDPs from South Sudan in Uganda are able to earn a living, according to Ochan.
It's only people who are now working with NGOs who are getting hard currency that can catch up. Otherwise, the rest of the people are sending their children away to reduce on the family size as a measure of cutting on the expenses. Two, for the last years during the conflict, especially 2017-2018, the agricultural community were not able to work in their gardens. Even with this issue of cantonment, somewhere in the community you have the government forces. When you go to the bush and come back, the soldiers can accuse that you are communicating with the rebels. When you move freely between two forces, you can be accused.
Alex Omeja, the deputy settlement commander for Palabek refugee camp, says the new arrivals enter Uganda through the five designated South Sudan-Uganda border points of Ngomoromo, Awenolui, Waligo, Madopei, and Ilego. Omeja says the huge number of refugees, many of whom are children, puts a strain on available resources.
So you find that at the end of the day, our schools are overstretched. One teacher may have over 200 children in a class. It is stretching onto the resources that we have in education. The health centers are overcrowded vis-a-vis the supply of drugs and also the human resource that are available.
And Omeja says there are only about a dozen police officers patrolling more than 48,000 IDPs. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, World Health Organization has declared Ebola an emergency. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time you were nervous?
It's when I sat for a secondary school certificate. Because I was fearing for my result not to come fail, because it will be shame to me.
The last time I was nervous was when I was expecting my firstborn daughter. The mother was not strong enough, so we were there waiting with the doctor. I was actually in Nairobi and my wife was in Khartoum.
For me, when I was nervous is when my mom gave birth with operation in the hospital, because I thought I will lose my mom if the operation failed. But thank God it went well.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Cameroon's second largest employer, the Cameroon Development Corporation, says it has been paralyzed by the separatist conflict in the country's English-speaking regions. The agricultural giant has not been able to pay its staff for a year because of falling production and revenue. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Limbe, Cameroon.
The village of Mianja used to be a banana production center in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest. 2 years ago, 2,000 people lived here, and many worked for the Cameroon Development Corporation's banana production unit. But these days, a visiting reporter sees only abandoned houses, empty schools, and silent factories. Oliver Kogge worked at the Mianja banana factory, but says security threats forced them to shut down. Armed separatists attacked the factory in 2017, he says, killing four workers and wounding scores of others.
This particular processing unit produces averagely 60 tons of banana daily. And after this attack, workers ceased. Workers escaped for their dear life. 560 workers were working in this particular section. In the course of stopping work, we have deprived 560 workers from employment.
The Cameroon Development Corporation is the Central African country's second largest employer and runs banana, palm oil and rubber plantations. But the three-year conflict between Anglophone rebels and government troops has forced the CDC to close farms and factories across the Western English-speaking regions. CDC General Manager Franklin Goninjie says more than half of his 20,000 workers, fearing attacks, refuse to work, while the remainder work only part-time.
If you look at the economy of our area, what else do we have? CDC every month, directly in form of salaries and wages, is 2.2 billion francs every month. All of that activity is there.
Cameroon's Agriculture Minister, Gabriel Mairobi, says the government is negotiating with staff to resume work. He says the government will assure their safety and settle the past year of unpaid salaries.
I would like to appreciate the willingness of all the workers to resume work. I can assure them that the government will take all the measures to pay the salary arrear and to give money so that the plantation and the factory will be back in activity.
The conflict in Cameroon's English-speaking regions was sparked in 2016 by protests against discrimination from the country's French-speaking majority in education and the justice system. The government responded with a crackdown and armed separatists fought back. The rebels consider state-run companies such as the CDC and institutions such as schools legitimate targets. Last month, the Cameroon Employers Association said rebel fighters had transformed many CDC plantations into training grounds. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Limbe, Cameroon.
The World Health Organization has declared the Ebola crisis in Congo, in Congo's North Kivu and Ituri provinces, a public health emergency of international concern. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA on the outcome of an emergency committee which met at the WHO headquarters in Geneva on Wednesday.
The declaration of the Ebola outbreak as an international public health emergency elevates the disease and the efforts needed to combat it to a significantly higher level of concern. Nevertheless, Chair of the Committee, Robert Steffen, cautions against overreacting to the meaning of this decision.
This is still a regional emergency and by no way a global threat. And why this change of opinion? There is concern about spread of Ebola from Goma, a getaway, even though so far no cases were newly infected in this city.
On Sunday, the first case of Ebola was discovered in Goma, a city of 2 million people. The pastor infected with the virus has since died. Steffen says the recurrence of intense transmission in Beni, an earlier epicenter of the disease, and the recent murder of two Ebola health workers were among other factors that fed into the committee's decision. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus acknowledges the risk of spread of the disease in the DRC remains very high, but he says the risk of spread outside the region remains low. Although the committee has declared Ebola to be a global health emergency, Tedros says WHO does not recommend any restrictions on travel or trade.
Which, rather than stopping Ebola, can actually hamper the fight. Closing borders could have disastrous consequences for the lives and livelihoods of the people who cross the border every day for trade, education, or to visit relatives.
Since the Ebola epidemic was declared nearly 1 year ago on August 1st, WHO reports there have been more than 2,500 cases, including nearly 1,670 deaths. This is the 10th outbreak of the disease over the last four decades in the DRC. It is the second largest outbreak after the 2014 historic epidemic in West Africa that killed more than 11,300 people. WHO warns insecurity due to conflict in North Kivu and Ituri provinces, as well as tepid international financial support, are main threats to stopping the Ebola virus. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The South Sudan National Revenue Authority says it's losing billions of South Sudanese pounds to tax exemptions. The Commissioner General of the Tax Revenue Authority says he's been threatened because of revoking certain exemptions that were promoted by high-ranking officials. Dr. Olympio Atipo says the government has granted exemptions of some 3 billion pounds a month. He says he's received several threats from unidentified individuals trying to get him removed from office for allegedly hurting their business interests. A June 14th letter written by Mayi Kayi, a minister in the office of the president, and addressed to Finance Minister Salvatore Garang, requests that the National Revenue Authority exempt the RAK Resource Group from paying taxes. The company's been described as an indigenous construction company. A Ugandan official says there's been a large influx of South Sudanese into refugee camps in northern Uganda. A refugee registration officer at the Palabek refugee camp in Uganda's Lamwa district says some 13,000 refugees have arrived in the camp since January, many of whom said they fled their villages because they're hungry. Mary Imuta, a mother of three, arrived in Block 5B of the camp on Monday. She says she and her children walked for 12 hours from her home village in the Lango Lajor area to a refugee reception center at the South Sudan-Uganda border. Muda says she was unable to produce enough food to feed her children at home, and she says farmers in her village also struggle to produce food because the rains are unreliable. And finally, the World Health Organization has declared the Ebola epidemic in the DRC Congo conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces a public health emergency of international concern. The declaration of the Ebola outbreak as an international public health emergency elevates the disease and the efforts needed to combat it to a significantly higher level of concern. Nevertheless, the chairman of the committee cautions against overreacting to the meaning of that decision. On Sunday, the first case of Ebola was discovered in Goma, a city of some 2 million people. The pastor was infected with the virus and has since died. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
Samori Touré Saya, Manina Oko, Lumumba Saya, Manina.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Africa Yako by Alpha Blondie.
Africa, Africa Yako, Africa. Africa, Africa yako.
Farafina chegi be fengelele kong, anjigi be masabale kong.
Africa, Africa yako. Africa, Africa yako. Africa, Africa yako. Tabonela, tabonela, asemoneka.
We've been listening to Alpha Blondie with the song Africa Yako. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Robaria mi kambam so bam so lango para tinella te
para fina jigi be fengele le kan an jigi be masa vale kan
samori tu resa ya ma